Welcome to Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If you are a person that is tired of apologizing for being you, you know, the human part of you that sometimes feels like it has to be different at home versus work versus play, the human side that just wants to be hot, humble, open, and transparent about your wants, desires, and uniqueness. If you answered yes, this podcast is for you. Join me, Emily Elrod, as I dive into conversations with amazing guests about what they are not sorry for in creative and loving ways. Let's get started. Hayden, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here.
I am too, because you're an awesome human being and I cannot wait for people to hear what you're going to be talking about today. So before we go into what you're not sorry for, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Totally. So I work as a success coach. So that means that I work with people who are feeling stuck and unfulfilled in their work, usually in corporate. And I work with them to help them take next steps into creating a life where they get paid to be themselves. Usually that's entrepreneurship, but it could also be nonprofit. It could be another corporate job. But the thing that I really care most about is supporting people in creating an experience of life externally that's a direct reflection of who they are internally. And I used to work in corporate, like Emily mentioned. I worked at LinkedIn for a couple of years, both in San Francisco and then here in Chicago. Left my full-time job about 3 years ago and have been doing coaching and training since then.
Yes. And you're so amazing at it too, because the thing that I love the most is you're so genuine with it. Like, you really care. Thanks. And you know, not that LinkedIn was a bad place to work, but the pressure of it. And whenever you're not walking in your purpose.
Bingo. Yeah, exactly. I think that's, you know, the thing that that drives me a lot of the time is how do I bring more of myself into my life? And how do I ensure that the work that I'm doing is having the greatest positive impact? And you can do it in a corporate role. I think you totally can, but it just wasn't the path for me. And I find that in what I'm up to now, I have a lot more freedom and flexibility to be able to start things that I think would be of value to people and, you know, to be able to share myself online in a way that I might not be able to or might feel afraid to if I was working for someone else. But I think you're spot on. Like, that kind of fulfillment and that kind of impact and that kind of authenticity is really important to me. And it's definitely something that I try and role model, you know, both in my businesses and also with the people that I work with.
Mm-hmm. And I think that leads into what you're not sorry for. So Hayden, if you can tell the world, what are you not sorry for?
Yeah. So this has been really, I've been really excited to talk about this. So I'm not sorry for being powerfully kind. And it's something that really just like this year has become super clear to me that I think that sometimes there's this perceived difference or delineation between what it means to be powerful and what it means to be kind. And I have started to put together, as a sidebar, I've started to put together a group coaching program for people who struggle with people pleasing. And I find that people who are people pleasers tend to fall on the kind side of the spectrum, so to speak. And they have a hard time being powerful. So they have a hard time owning their voice. They have a hard time asking for what they want. They have a hard time setting boundaries. And then you think about the flip side with the people who are really powerful, but they don't bring a whole lot of kindness. So there's a lot of control. There's a lot of assertiveness. There's a lot of aggressiveness. There's great things to it. And, you know, there's some downsides to it. But I think that there's been this idea that you can't be both at the same time. And you find that people generally fall into one or two of those camps. So especially like with business leaders, you tend to find people who are much more powerful, but not necessarily kind. And then you look at people who are in the helping profession, teachers, nurses, that sort of thing. And you find people who are really kind, but maybe not necessarily as powerful as they could be. And so part of what I'm really passionate about and really excited about is like breaking up that myth, because it's totally a myth. Like, you can actually be both of those things at the same time. You can be powerful and own your voice, ask for what you want, lead by example, call people forward, call people out, when they're out of integrity, and at the same time, be really kind, be sweet, be vulnerable, be, unapologetically loving of other people. And it's not easy. I think that's the hard part, is like actually creating both of those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. Requires most people don't have it naturally, I don't think, but it requires a lot of inner work, and it requires a lot of healing, and it requires a lot of being willing to take a look at the traumas that you've suffered in your life and be willing to like bring them out into the open so that you can talk about them and heal from them. This is exciting to me because it feels like it's a win-win across the board. And I just think about like how companies would change, how countries would change, like literally like how the world would change if people saw this as a possibility and were excited to start to take steps towards creating that for themselves.
And I'll say right now that is something that is I'm experiencing in my own life is the conflict whenever you're not powerfully kind. Because my husband has more of a powerful mindset and I'm more of a kind. I'm the people pleaser and I'll sugarcoat things around, and he is straight up honest.
Yeah.
And so for me, it has been, it's okay to be honest with people. And it's not like I have integrity and I'm honest, but I don't want to hurt people's feelings, you know? And so what ours was a fight that got us to me to start being more awakened about, hey, it's okay to be honest. And that's actually what he needs to hear. Because powerful people need to hear things, how powerful people talk typically. And I didn't know that. I was like, oh, because there was one time we even had a conversation and I'm like, I told you what to do. And he's like, no, you didn't. You said, if I would like to. I'm like, look, is that not the same? So what got you to this for you to be like, powerfully kind of flows together.
Yeah. A lot of anxiety, a lot of not getting what I want, a lot of stress and guilt and very heavy emotions. And I say that facetiously, but honestly, it was a lot of just like, you know, we have this idea in coaching that there are certain patterns that you live inside of, and part of the evolution or the personal growth and development process is starting to bankrupt these patterns. So you actually use them, you lean into them so that you get to a point where you realize they don't work anymore. And I think that this is the opportunity in both of these circumstances, both in being powerful and in being kind. But for me personally, it was just that I spent so much of my life being so focused on the kind part and being so focused on the nice part that I had a very hard time setting boundaries inside of my relationships. And so I spent a lot of time being very resentful of people, which wasn't their fault. It was totally my stuff. Being angry, but being angry at myself and not sharing, you know, when I was upset with someone else, not standing my ground, not asking for what I needed, you know, not being afraid to take up space, which is, I think, something that a lot of people struggle with, because there's this sense that like, if I take up space, it's going to mean that there's less space for someone else. And so to be nice and kind, I need to make myself as small as humanly possible. And I just spent so much time doing that, that I just got to the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. You know, I'm like, I'm over this. It's like you eat so much of something and you're like, I'm tired of that. I never want to eat that again. And that's how I feel about people pleasing. I'm like, I've eaten so much of it that I'm like, I'm over it. And now I want to lean into something different, because the results that I'm looking to create and the impact that I'm looking to have are not going to come about by me living my entire life based on whether or not I'm going to make someone upset or how I'm going to make other people happy, or, you know, how I'm going to be subservient to what other people are looking to create or what they want. Like, it requires me to step into my leadership and it requires me to step into my power. And that's the cool part about this whole thing, is I feel that my purpose is important enough and the impact that I want to have is exciting and important enough for me to be willing to get messy in being powerful. Because if you've never been powerful before, if you don't know what that's like, it's not just going to happen to you. Like, it's not like someone's just going to flip a switch and you're going to be like, okay, I totally get how to be powerful now in my life and set boundaries and say no to people. Like, it's going to require you to like practice and get messy and try things that are really confronting, you know, with people that you trust. And so, yeah, I think to answer your question, it was just a lot of personal experience of feeling like I was walked over and I wasn't getting what I wanted or what I needed, and just being fed up with it and deciding to do something different.
And that's so true, that as some of the things as a people pleaser, as a recovering people pleaser, that and a perfectionist of the it is draining. It really is. And you get to a point, but you have, I think the other fault of it is that a lot of times you can either blame people, and it's not blaming yourself, but you have to self-analyze. Are you making some of the things happen the way, if it's a reoccurring pattern? And I think one of the eye-opening things for me is I used to have the inability to say no and try to get the power for it.
Yeah.
And not having the guilt in it. So talk to people about whenever you are powerful to be kind, and how maybe kind people perceive powerful people as arrogant, and powerful people may perceive, and the opposite is like weakness or something with that. That simple, that how do people see each other opposite, and how can we see that we're in unity?
Yeah, totally. Well, it's really funny because I think the thing that I would offer is it's two sides of the same coin. Like both of those things, and this is what people don't realize, is like you being a total controlling jerk and being really powerful is manipulation. It is a control technique. Just like people pleasing is manipulation and a control technique. And most people don't talk about this. Like people pleasing doesn't get, which is interesting, right? Because people pleasing doesn't get talked about in this way. And I think what ends up happening a lot of times is people relate to people pleasers as like, oh, well, she's just too nice, or like, oh, you know, she's just, you know, he's just really kind, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there's almost like this like infantilizing, like relating to people pleasers as immature and like, oh, it's just kind of a pushover or like whatever it is. And I think that's actually a huge mistake, because it removes the responsibility from people who are people pleasing to get responsible for the fact that they are manipulative and they are controlling. And I say this as a recovering people pleaser, right? But like, you know, you think about people pleasing and it's like, it's all about how do I say the right thing to elicit the response that I want from this person. And usually it's, I want this person to like me. And so how do I censor my thoughts, or like only share a version of my thoughts so that I don't make them upset, I don't make them angry, and I can get them to like me. And so, you know, both sides are about control and manipulation. They just show up in different ways. And so usually if you're on the people pleasing side of the spectrum, you look at people who are powerful as like, oh, they're jerks, and like they're selfish, you know, they're taking too much from everyone else. And if you're a powerful, assertive person, you look at people pleasers and you're like, they're spineless. Like they're, you know, they're a pushover. They're, you know, selfless to a dangerous degree. And you like get annoyed with people who are, you're like, oh, you're too weak, or you're too kind, like grow a backbone, you know, type of thing. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, right, like both of them are two sides of the same coin. And it's all like, all of it is just like moving towards the middle. It's just moving towards this middle place where it's balanced, and you can be powerful when you need to be, and you can be kind when you need to be, but ultimately your behavior is not driven by fear, and it's not driven by control. It's instead driven by a very deeply rooted sense of self-worth and love for other people, and a willingness to be authentic and say the thing that needs to be said, you know, in the moment.
And one thing that we talk a lot about is to be hot, which is humble, open, and transparent. That's even what kind of bursts out this unapologetically bold, is having those conversations. So talk to people about being hot, humble, open, and transparent while being powerfully kind, and how it can take it to a different level and dimension, not only in your work, but your home and play. Like no matter where you're at as a human, how can it take you to the next level?
So I don't think that becoming more powerful or becoming more kind is possible without honesty, openness, and transparency. Like I actually don't think that it's possible, because what happens for people is they are given a certain set of instructions as a child. Like you are given a script as a child, and it's like, here's how the world works, and here's who you are as a person, and here's how you're going to relate to yourself and to everyone else. And people are given different scripts. I was given a people pleasing script, and my script was stay as small as possible and be nice and be the mediator and get people to like you, and you'll get what you want. Other people are given a different script, and it's, you have to be assertive. You have to be a jerk. You have to be very bold and decisive, and you have to take the lead. And that's how you're going to get what you want. And so this idea of balancing out towards the middle, it actually requires honesty, openness, and transparency, because in order to get clear on what the scripts are in the first place, you have to be willing to look. You actually have to be willing to do the work and sit down and share with people and share with yourself and be radically honest, open, and transparent and say, what are the scripts that are running my life? What are the beliefs that I have, the core pieces of my identity, what I believe to be true about the world and what drives my behavior? And what are those things? Because step one is you have to notice, you have to actually be aware of it. And once you're aware of it, you can then take a look and say, is this serving me? Like, is this actually in service of the person that I want to become and the life that I want to create for myself? And if it's not, then you have to do the work to replace that story, to break up the script and replace the story with something else. But all of that requires honesty, openness, and transparency. It requires that vulnerability. Because if you don't have those things, all you're going to do is dig your heels in, and you're going to stay, and you're going to commit more to the script, which work. And the crazy part about it is, like, and the part of the reason why I'm so passionate about the work that I do is because this is how most people live life. Don't ever take a look at, what are the beliefs that are running my life? Why do I do the things that I do? Why do I believe the things that I believe? Literally just looking. It's just a question of looking and becoming aware. Most people don't do that. And so most people learn how the world operates when they're 6 or 7, and they go all the way to 90, and they literally die having spent their entire life playing out a script that was given to them when they were 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. And that is a tragedy. That is a tragedy, because you think about how much more connected, joyful, loving, authentic life is when you break up out of those scripts, and how much that has an impact on everything that you do, not just from a work perspective and not just finding a career that's fulfilling where you get paid to be you and you work with people that you really love and you feel like you're making an impact, but also in everything else. That's actually required. It's a requirement to creating more authentic, connected, compassionate relationships with other people. It's a requirement to play more. It's a requirement to make more money, earn more money. Like, everything that people are looking for is made possible through being honest, open, and transparent. That's the way to go.
I am a huge amen to that. And I don't think I could say it any better. Like, it's so true, especially with how you said it's such a tragedy, because I say one of the saddest things is, and I always say it's bad business, I wish I didn't have a job sometimes, because my job is to help people, adults, to be less stressed, to be more motivated, to live better. And I feel like if they were taught as children and got the part of to be able to learn, to be able to explore, I teach grown children what they should have been taught as kids, you know? Yeah. And yeah. I even say that to myself. It's like, I act like a child. Some of my things when I pitch fits and stuff, it's like, okay, trace that back. And I call it you work, because it's the work that I need to do to fix you. You know, the only one that you can fix is yourself. So what is some you work that you would recommend for people that are on either side of the coin to get to be powerfully kind?
Therapy. therapy. I think every person that is alive today should go to therapy, should go see a therapist. It's really unfortunate that there's so much of a mental health stigma, and there's so much of a this preconceived notion about what it means about you to go see a therapist. I think the thing that I would offer is, like, it's not, therapy is not just for people who have had big T trauma, like some sort of abuse or something, you know, terrible that happened to them as children. We actually all have trauma, all of us, every single person, because of the time and age in which we live. We all grow up and we experience some form of trauma. And so, like, your life might be great and that's awesome. And there is another level. There's always another level to the amount of, like, joy, connection, peace, fulfillment, success that you can experience. But it requires, again, getting clear on, you know, what those scripts are. So I think therapy, first and foremost, go see a therapist. Everyone watching, go see a therapist. And then, you know, you can take a look at what are the other healing modalities. And it's whatever you feel called or attracted to. Coaching is different than therapy, but I think coaching can be therapeutic in a sense, because through the process of creating how you want things to go differently, it ends up healing how things have gone, which is cool. But you know, you could also go see someone who does Reiki. You could go see someone who pulls tarot cards. You could go see, you know, like there are all of these, you could go, you know, go see a massage therapist, like for real. Like there's so many different ways to get more in touch. Go do yoga. There's so many different ways to like get in touch with you. And it's just a matter of like picking a direction and like going in that direction consistently over time.
Mm-hmm. No, and I love that, because literally at 5 o'clock after this, me and my husband, we have therapy session. We yes. literally are going to, and
the nice thing, work.
Like, you're in marriage. Like, is your marriage crumbling? No, it's a preventative approach.
Yeah.
It took 7 years of our marriage to figure out that, hey, we need to actually talk about some things. And it's that powerfully kind discussion that, so we've been in it for what, 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. I will say it's life changing. It is absolutely life changing. So therapy is not for, and I think that's the biggest point too, that mental health gets such a big stigma on, hey, I'm a proponent for it and I'm open. Like, I love it. I use what is called Regain. It's me mm-hmm. and my we do it together. There is also mm-hmm. a better help. There's so many different options, mm-hmm. and especially right now with online. And then coaching. What I have found is if people are resistant to therapy because they're like, ah, it's something bad about me, go see a coach. Like, if you change the wording and one is more about looking at a goal and trying to work on the goal and not the past, and still you'll do some you work mm-hmm. either way. Mm-hmm. But I think I really want to hit on the point of the importance that people like me, people like you, it makes a difference. So my next question for you is thinking about earlier how you spoke about manipulation. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really unique point that you talked about people pleasing being a manipulation.
Yeah.
Because it is. Because I can think the times that like, and I think with my kids, because I have two children, and I think about the times where I fix things for them. So in essence, that my husband won't get upset about it, you know, and try to also think about my childhood. My mother did that as well, you know, to avoid, because we don't want conflict. We don't want to be uncomfortable. Yeah. So talk about that, about how either side of the coin on manipulation, how is it how we don't want to feel uncomfortable, and mm-hmm. what's the value of actually getting uncomfortable?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Yeah, it's so funny. everyone has a flavor of it. Like, even if you don't identify as a people pleaser, and even if you don't identify as someone who's like aggressive or like a powerful jerk, like everyone is manipulative in some way. And it's interesting to you because it's sort of a loaded word. Like, you know, I think that when people think about manipulation, it comes along with this sense of like, oh, well, it's really intentional and it's really well thought out and it's planned. It's a planned manipulation, but it's not. It's just unintentional. You are unintentionally manipulating people by not being real and authentic and honest. And I totally get why. I mean, I get it, right? Like, everyone is really terrified that everyone is going to find out that there is something wrong with them. And everyone has these exact same fears. Literally every person has the exact same fear that there's something wrong with me, or there's something different about me, or I'm too much, or I'm not enough, or I'm unlovable, or I don't trust myself, or like whatever it is. Everyone is terrified that everyone is going to find out these deep, dark secrets, you know, about them. Mm-hmm. And the importance of getting uncomfortable is that it is the only way to move through that. It is the only way. And the interesting part is that just given like the society that we live in now, the prevailing way to deal with those insecurities is to perform on top of them. And so, you know, we have these deep-seated insecurities and beliefs. Like, one of my deep-seated fears is that I'm an unlovable person. Mm-hmm. It's a very deep-seated fear for me. And so the people pleasing and the performance and the me being super smiley and being like really nice and like bending over backwards for other people, like all of that is a performance to distract from the fact that I am terrified that you're going to realize that I'm just unlovable and you don't actually love me. But all the performance just gets in the way of actually having the real conversation. And over time, the performance becomes more comfortable, even though it's not, it becomes more comfortable than actually taking a look at addressing the insecurity head on and healing it. And I think that's where most people find themselves is they know their performance. They know how they avoid talking about their insecurities and the things that they're afraid of and scared of. And even though it's not great, even though they're like, I'm really anxious all the time and I don't have the relationships that I want and I don't have the job that I want, it's still more comfortable than doing the inner work and addressing those insecurities and fears, because at least it's known. You're comfortable with it because you know it. You know how it goes. You know you're people pleasing. And when you look at doing the inner work to face the insecurities, you're like, I don't know how that's going to go. You might actually have to change. Like, you might actually have to like tell that person, you're a jerk and I don't want to be in a relationship with you anymore. And that is so terrifying to people that they would rather continue. And I totally get it. I do the same thing, but they would rather stay in that relationship and stay in the comfortable performance than, you know, do the uncomfortable thing.
Oh, and I don't think you actually know any bit of my story, but that actually sums it up beautifully. I put that mask on. That mask so much got me into depression, where it just, let's keep covering it up. And how our bodies are not designed to continue to cover it up. It eventually will crash. And many of the viewers know a little bit about my story, about how I had my child out of wedlock. And it was that deep-seated fear. And it took years for me to realize it was all from a lack of love, that I didn't love myself and I never had forgiven myself for some actions in the past, that it just brewed and brewed until that moment. And that was a life-changing time for me. And a lot of people, I feel like if they don't go through a tragedy or something, sometimes they don't want to do the U work. I had to, because my life was totally flipped on side being a single mom. And I'm like, I gotta do something, you know? And my family was very supportive of me to continue learning and growing. So how can we help people? And I guess that's why I have such a passion for it as well, because I feel like it's a tragedy that people wait for a life crisis or what I now call a midlife awakening, or they come to a tragedy before they're like, okay, I gotta change, you know. And it's, for a preventative person, it's just like, So, and I know we're just talking about Powerfully Kind, but I can see how it has affected me. And if I just learned about this a little bit earlier in life. So,
yeah, I love the, so the question, how do we make a difference? It's like, how do we actually make a difference for people? And I think it's this is the crazy part, is people get stuck in limbo because they are just uncomfortably uncomfortable enough not to do anything. And that's where most people, like, that's the crazy part, is like, that's where most people live the entirety of their life, is like in this 6 or 7 out of 10 place where they're like, yeah, it's fine. Like, things are fine. There's nothing that's like horrible. And so sometimes it's actually like a blessing in disguise to have something really terrible happen, because it actually wakes you up and you go, holy crap, like, this is, I don't want to be doing this. You know, I want to be doing something else. And so as far as like making a difference, I think there's a couple things that come to mind for me. One is continuing to do this kind of work and talk about these things. Because the thing that really drives me is, how do I take these concepts and how do I create content and frameworks and books and speeches and courses and all this kind of stuff that when people are ready to hear it and when they're ready to learn, they can go out and find this information and get this information. I also hope that, you know, in me sharing something in a particular way, that it inspires someone to go, that's me. And to think differently, you know, about how they live their life. But I think that the most powerful thing that we can do is do our own work. That is the most powerful thing that you can do for other people, is to do your own work. Because what ends up happening is you lead by example. and you lead by sharing vulnerably, and you lead by being willing to go out on a branch for other people in service of them, to tell them that thing that no one else is going to tell them, and doing it from a place of love. Like, that's what I do as a coach. All that's my job. Like, my job is to tell people things lovingly that no one else is going to tell them, about how they're getting in their own way, and about how they're not getting what they want, and about, you know, all these patterns that are keeping them from actually creating the experience of life that they want to have. Marianne Williamson has a beautiful, beautiful quote, and I'm totally going to butcher it. But one of the, it's the, our greatest fear is not that we are inadequate, but that we are powerful beyond measure. And one of the later parts of that quote is she talks about, as we, I'm totally going to butcher this. As we, create more authenticity for ourselves or whatever it is, we basically give other people permission to do the same. As we liberate ourselves from our fears, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same, because that's what everybody's looking for. And so for me, when I think about doing that work, it's like, how do I be that example out in the world? And everyone that I come into contact with, see how I'm doing my own inner work and how I can be powerful and kind at the same time, and hopefully feel inspired to, you know, start their own journey towards that thing.
And that's the thing, it's, you're a catalyst for change. And I want to say you are. And the way you speak, the way you have passion, the way that you love is such a catalyst for change. So I am beyond grateful for you for even coming on the show and just talking about being powerfully kind. So I guess my final last words, I will ask you in question is, what would you tell somebody that keeps apologizing for people pleasing or for being powerful or being kind and not coming together?
That's a good question. Well, I think, you know, similar to what I said earlier, the path forward in terms of growth is, it always starts with recognition and awareness. And so I think the thing that I would offer people who are saying sorry a lot or apologizing a lot, one is just notice how often you do it. And this is something I point out to members of my family all the time when I'm home with them. I'll literally, like, you just said sorry, or like, you just said sorry right there, or you just apologized or whatever. And even just like being cognizant of it is like, oh my God, I do that all the time. And then the second part of it is asking yourself, why are you sorry? Why, like, what's actually driving you, driving your need to apologize? And most often what you'll find, it's for taking up space. People apologize for taking up space and like existing. And that in and of itself, there's a lot, even just sitting with that question, I think that there's a lot in there to be taken away.
I love it. And I'm so grateful for you. Thank you for everybody that watched it. I know they had to get something from it, because I did. So many key takeaways of just being powerfully kind together for love, for humanity, and for yourself. And it can really make a difference. So thank you so much, Hayden, for joining us. And thank you for all that watched.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If this touched you in any way, please like and subscribe and share with your friends as we continue the message of being unapologetically bold by being hot humans who are humble, open, and transparent. See you next time.